Thanks, Claudia. Thank you to David, WWF, and thank you to Roger Mark and ECSP. It's always a pleasure to be here, in particular with my ECSP colleagues. I probably had the shortest commute of any of the panelists today, two floors down. So Keith had a number of good news stories to tell about India, and unfortunately, turning to Pakistan, there's going to be a lot of bad news stories. First off, not to be too melodramatic, but I would contend that water scarcity is a nightmare scenario that is all too real and all but inevitable in Pakistan. There's an IMF report that came out about a year ago, a bit more than a year ago, and it found that Pakistan has the world's fourth highest rate of water use. Its water intensity rate, which is the amount of water used per unit of GDP, is one of the world's highest. The IMF also found that Pakistan's per capita annual water availability is 1,017 cubic meters, which is perilously close to the scarcity threshold of 1,000 cubic meters. And just much more recently, a few months ago, a UN report came out with a similar estimate of 1,014 cubic meters. Meanwhile, NASA satellite data of the world's underground aquifers has revealed that the aquifer in the Indus Basin, whose rivers and tributaries constitute Pakistan's chief water source, is the second most stressed in the world. So this essentially means rapid depletion with little or no sign of recharge. Now, groundwater is, as you all know, it's critical stuff. I mean, it's essentially the last resort for water security. It's what we tap into when surface supplies run dry. And yet in Pakistan, this is a safety net that's essentially fraying. So, you know, in effect, Pakistan is voraciously consuming water even as water tables are plummeting precipitously. So that's not a good scene. So, you know, what are the challenges associated with Pakistan's water situation? I'll briefly identify eight of them, which also effectively double as the core drivers of Pakistan's water crisis. Many of these are quite obvious and apply in other countries as well. They don't all apply in other places, particularly the last one, which I'll get to. Population growth, above all. There's been a major strain on supply because of the robust demand of a rapidly growing population, which now numbers close to 200 million people. The census has long been overdue in Pakistan, so there are no clear figures. But according to the UN estimates that many of us look at, we're looking at a population of nearly 200 million people. Pakistan's annual population growth rate is around 1.8%, and it's projected to stay over 1% until at least 2030. Second challenge, climate change. Pakistan is arguably one of the most climate-vulnerable countries in South Asia, if not the world. Oftentimes we talk about Bangladesh in that context. Pakistan is right up there. The Western Himalayan region has experienced rapid glacial melting in recent years, with glacial thinning of up to a meter per year. The government in Pakistan has claimed that glacial melt on Pakistan's mountains has increased by nearly 25% in recent years. Now, this obviously has major implications because the Western Himalayan glaciers feed the waters of the Indus Basin, which is essentially Pakistan's chief water source. It's climate change that helps explain why the Indus River, the once mighty Indus River, has slowed to essentially a trickle in parts of the southern province of Sindh, which has compelled many impoverished farmers and also fishermen to move to the cities to seek non-water-focused livelihoods. Third challenge is agriculture. As in much of South Asia, agriculture is a key contributor to the economy. It consumes a very large majority of Pakistan's water supply, about 90%, and yet it consumes this water very inefficiently. It's been estimated that Pakistan's crop productivity per unit of water is 0.13 kilograms per cubic meter, which is quite low, to say the least. A fourth challenge associated with water in Pakistan is a lack of healthy infrastructure. Pakistan is unfortunately rather notorious for its leaky, dilapidated pipes, canals, and dams. Back in the 50s and the 60s, the international community heavily funded construction of a number of large infrastructure projects, including the Tarbela Dam. And yet in recent years, Pakistan has really struggled to make very urgent repairs. So as a result, the Tarbela Dam's lost a whopping 30% of its storage capacity since the late 1970s. And its total dam storage, Pakistan's total dam storage, constitutes only 30 days of average demand. And by contrast, in India, the figure is about 220 days. You also have problems with canals leaking, which leads to tremendous waste. Fifth challenge associated with water in Pakistan is sort of comes leads from the fourth one, water inefficient state policies. I just mentioned the ability or the unwillingness to make needed repairs to infrastructure, and I think you could add to that problematic policy this. The government in Pakistan has traditionally subsidized the most water-guzzling form of agriculture, known as flood irrigation. It's obviously an irrigation method that keeps the water flowing all the time, and of course this is what you have in India as well. The state has been relatively slow to pick up on the merits of more water-efficient drip irrigation. There have been some private sector efforts to get into this space, which I can get into later. The state in Pakistan has also subsidized the production of some of the more water-intensive crops, such as sugar. And this is particularly salient given that the current government in Pakistan is run by a family that has major business stakes in the sugar industry. More broadly, the Pakistani government does not ignore water problems by any means, but it has not come out with any sort of comprehensive policy to tackle the water issue. And unfortunately, one of the major water-related agencies, the Water and Power Development Authority, is known for being rather ineffective. Sixth challenge is dirty water. Large amounts of Pakistan's water is polluted, thanks in no small part to the fact that the country has few, if any, wastewater treatment facilities. And the statistics about dirty water, polluted water, are really quite heartbreaking. Among other tragedies, dirty water kills more than 600 Pakistani children every day. Nearly 40,000 of them under five die from it every year. So what this means is that already precious water supplies are made more precious by the reality that much of what's still available is polluted and not fit for consumption. A seventh challenge associated with water is awareness, or lack of awareness. Civil society in Pakistan has done a tremendous job of bringing attention to water insecurity and the need to be judicious or more judicious in terms of consumption habits. You also have efforts in rural areas to use radio, which is a very powerful medium, there to highlight the challenges of water problems and the need to be judicious. There are also frequent academic conferences in major cities about water. But across the board, you still have many folks that either don't know or don't care about the water problems in the country, and this is reflected in consumption habits, which are often wasteful. Finally, eighth challenge is perhaps the most important, and here is where Pakistan diverges a bit from other countries, particularly in the developing world, when it comes to major challenges associated with water. The best way to describe this is the deeply unequal power structures that make, quite frankly, make life miserable for the masses and hamper their ability to access basic services, including water resources. I think one of the more troubling examples of this is in Sindh province, where you have very inequitable land ownership policies in which a small elite controls huge expanses of land. You have many landless folks who struggle to access the water that's found on the land controlled by these elites. And this is a manifestation of what many describe as feudal-like conditions that predominate in many areas, many rural areas of Pakistan, particularly Sindh, which happens to be one of Pakistan's driest provinces. And it's been said that land ownership is a proxy for water rights in Pakistan. If you don't own land, your right to water is highly tenuous. These wealthy landlords seemingly go out of their way to undermine water security. I should say many of these wealthy landlords are tied to government, folks in parliament, and so forth. In the summer of 2010, when Pakistan was hit by some catastrophic flooding, some of these landowners actually diverted floodwater so that it moved away from their land and onto the modest plots overseen by their tenants or other landless folks. Now, let me identify something that I do not believe poses a challenge for Pakistan in the water context, even though many Pakistanis will rigorously assume that it does, and that's India. In Pakistan, many people, including anti-India terror groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba, accuse India, which is Pakistan's upstream rival, of essentially plugging up water and keeping it from flowing down into Pakistan, thereby depleting river flows into Pakistan. Certainly, this is a hypothetical possibility. It could happen. But there's really no evidence to suggest that India is actively preventing water from coming into Pakistan. The dams that India has constructed are run of the river, meaning they don't store in significant amounts of water. So in this regard, India is probably more of a convenient scapegoat than a genuine explanation for or challenge associated with Pakistan's water insecurity. The broader reality is that there's actually been a fair level of cooperation between these two enemies in managing transboundary water resources in the Indus Basin. And a key reason for this is the Indus Waters Treaty. Many of you know what the IWT is. It's nearly a 60-year-old agreement that governs how India and Pakistan manage the Indus River Basin's rivers and tributaries. Long been seen as a success story because while India and Pakistan have fought several wars, they've never fought a war over water. Not yet. The significant thing about the IWT is that it allocates three rivers each to Pakistan and India, but Pakistan is given control of the Indus Basin's three large western rivers, the Indus, the Jhelum, and the Chenab, which account for 80% of the water in the entire basin. Now, Pakistan often claims that it is disadvantaged by the IWT, but in fact, the IWT does give it control over the vast majority of the Indus Basin's river flows, which perhaps was an effort to compensate for the fact that Pakistan is inherently vulnerable as the lower riparian. So the IWT is the chief tool of transboundary water management in the Indus Basin, but it certainly is threatened by several factors. Two of them are climate change and population growth. Obviously, when the treaty was drawn up in 1950, it wasn't able to take into account climate change effects and population growth that both countries have experienced, and which obviously puts more of a strain on both countries' water resources. So there have been voices on both sides of the border that have called for the treaty to be renegotiated. My own view is that there is not enough cooperation in the India-Pakistan relationship. There's not enough trust to allow for a renegotiation. We can get into this later. And the other major factors that imperil effective transboundary water management in the Indus Basin are politics and security. I mean, the deep tensions between India and Pakistan, which have grown even more fraught over the last year or two, I would contend may well threaten the viability of the IWT. Many of you will recall that last year, India's government hinted that it could retaliate for terrorist attacks on the Indian army, attacks that New Delhi believes were carried out by terrorists with ties to Pakistani intelligence, by revoking the IWT treaty altogether. So in reality, India is very unlikely to do this. I can go into why later. But the fact that India has even hinted at taking such a drastic measure, I think, raises some alarm bells, given that the IWT has lasted for so long, even through multiple wars between the two countries. So the essential point here, and I'll wrap up here, is that water is very deeply intertwined with long-standing political disputes between India and Pakistan. It is 100% wrong to claim that water is a soft issue in India-Pakistan relations and that the two sides can use water cooperation as a confidence-building measure to build trust. It certainly is not that easy, and that's because water is deeply intertwined with the Kashmir issue. The rivers of the Indus Basin flow through Kashmir, the contested region that's triggered several India-Pakistan wars. And when Pakistan accuses India of stealing Pakistan's water and preventing it from flowing downstream, Pakistanis often assert that the only way to stop Indian water theft is to liberate Jammu and Kashmir, a region of Kashmir controlled by India that Pakistan has always claimed. So in effect, you cannot separate transboundary water management from the ugly, complex political disputes in India-Pakistan relations. There's really nothing apolitical about transboundary water management on the Indian subcontinent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael.